Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby, and today I am joined by Jeff Hardinson, who is the CRO of Casemark, and in addition was the VP of Product Marketing over at Calendly, that little tool that I'm sure no one has really heard of. So anyway, Jeff, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, Mason. Great to be here.
I have to say something embarrassing for everyone else. We did not book using Calendly, and I feel really embarrassed about it. We booked using HubSpot, so next time I'll make sure we book using Calendly, because I don't know, book using Calendly, but no, I'm excited to dig into it today.
We forget.
In short, well, thank you much. We've been on a bit of a stint trying to just talk with more CROs and people that manage more of the full revenue cycle versus just marketing. Because when we look at why ABM programs typically fail, it's the alignment component between marketing and sales. So I'm excited to talk with you and dig into some of the programs that you've previously built to figure out how, as you think about it holistically from not just now managing marketing, but also marketing sales, how we make sure that we've got that alignment across the board. So that said, I always like to start with just when building an ABM program, like how do you go about actually finding that target account list and that audience?
Yeah. So I would say it's gotten a lot easier than it used to be. Say 20 years ago, you didn't have all these tools. You didn't have Zoom Info, Clay, Apollo, et cetera, to make it really easy. And now the last 10 years, there's been the emergence of these platforms that make it really easy to say, okay, I want to go after, say, marketers in consumer packaged goods companies greater than 10,000 employees. And that's been so much faster than how it used to be, right? Yeah. It's even gotten better, I'd say, with AI. So there's now a lot of people that are augmenting that whole process by creating AI agents to scrape information that's on the internet and build their list before they even try to enrich it. So for example, like at Casemark, we're targeting lawyers with AI platform. We're able to go build a agent in, say, Manus and go scrape all kinds of different top 10, top 100 lists of law firms and create all those lists of names and then also pair them with their domains and then enrich the list versus just going in and trying to piece it all together.
It's actually even scary, just like free ChatGPT. You can just go in and say, hey, I've got this company that I really want to, like, I enjoy working with. They're a great customer. Can you help me find 20 more companies just like this? Like, the ability to find great target accounts, I don't think has ever been easier. So I'm always curious, the tools are only as good typically as the input. So I'm curious, as you've been building out programs like this, like, how do you actually determine this is the best customer that we actually want to go pull information for?
So I've talked about this on LinkedIn before, like recently, was this whole notion of ideal customer profile versus target audience, right? And I actually think this is what causes a lot of debates and people just haven't named it like that before. And this is what I mean by it. Ideal customer profile to me is a certain type of customer in a, maybe it's even a small segment that is likely to buy your product, use it, retain, and maybe even expand, right? Not just buy your product. There's all kinds of people that will buy your product and churn, right? There's all kinds of people that will privately beta test your product, but never buy it. But there's a smaller segment of companies that types of companies that will buy and be able to renew year after year versus a target audience. And a target audience is an industry or segment that maybe isn't your ideal customer profile. Maybe they've never bought your product before, but you think they should. And I think that is what causes a lot of debate, is that there are founders of startups out there and CEOs and leaders who want to go after a certain segment, but it's not yet an ideal customer profile. They're not yet buying, they're not yet renewing, but they believe that, they just believe, looking into their crystal balls, that this type of buyer would buy if they did a great enough job selling or marketing to them. And so what I try to do is figure that out with leadership and say, are we going after a target audience? Are we pushing a rock up a hill like Sisyphus? Or are we really going to try to go after, to start, the low-hanging fruit, those companies that are already buying and renewing? And we just want to really corner the market on that segment.
I actually really like that breakdown, because as I'm talking with people about building out their target account list or building out an ABM program, I'm always really bullish of just, do we actually have data that supports this is the best customer? Because I want to be super clear, I'm an agency. So like, if somebody buys from us and then they're like, this is our perfect market, and they've got zero data to support it, they're going to blame us for that. So like, I'm really bullish and just like, goal of ABM, get more of your best, unless you actually know going in, this is actually an experiment. We're going to run ABM as a way of quickly validating, do we actually serve this market well? Yes or no? And some, I'm going to be super clear, some people hate that idea that like, I'm going to do a whole program to just understand, is this market even valid for us? Yeah. There's no quicker way. This quote from Gary Vee, which is just, all good marketing does is educates a market on how good or bad your product is more quickly. So totally. Yeah, I love that framing of just, sometimes it's a hunch, but we feel it in the market. We can see it. Let's go after it and see what happens.
And you're right. Actually, ABM tools, when it comes to like display advertising and being able to quickly be able to reach a certain target audience, it's oftentimes a fantastic way to expedite that experiment versus having your sellers go out and try to cold call or set meetings with people who are like, what? I'm not in the market to buy this. ABM can prove that out pretty quickly.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So once we've nailed down that target audience, and again, I like the distinction of, is this an ICP where we know with absolute confidence, like, this is the best customer, they're going to buy and retain and expand for years and years to come? Or are we doing a bit of a hunch and we feel like this is a good market that we should try to go and expand into? Once we've nailed down what kind of program we're running, I'm curious, how do you then think through actually figuring out that chicken mix to actually engage that specific audience?
So in terms of the tactical mix, I would say that people have been doing account-based marketing and account-based selling for decades, even before all the ABM tools. And what they literally did was, let's create a list of companies. Let's say it's like top 100 law firms. And then let's create a list of who we think are the decision makers in those law firms, or possible champions or possible economic buyers. And let's go market to those people. And it used to be by hand, where they would send direct mail to them. I had a client years ago that taught me about ABM. That was like the puffy mailer. You would send it in the mail to them. And then maybe you would do email to them, and maybe you would do events just with them. And then you would have sales come in and your air cover over that. And they're also trying to sell to those people, and you've warmed them up for sales. And that's been going on for decades. What the emergence of the ABM tools did, and for some reason, sometimes we define ABM as the tools when it's really that old school process. What the tools did was just made it faster, easier, more powerful, arguably, to do it, right? So now it's easier to be able to send the emails to these and create the lists to send to them, because it's all within one platform, the enrichment as well as the emailing. It's easier to be able to email or contact them based on signals, such as, have they searched on some trade publication about this product? Well, we can pull that data in as an intent signal. That was more difficult to do decades ago. It's easier to be able to show how it's all going to sales within a dashboard. And then it's easier to do like display advertising to all these people to complement the emailing, which was harder to do in a targeted way years ago. Now, it's not perfect targeting, but you know what I mean. So I would say, I first try to just think about, what are the old school things I could do if I don't have any money? Well, I could email people, I could set up events with them, and I could have sales contact them as well. And then what are the new school things that I can do that are scrappy, to borrow a name from you, that are scrappy and won't blow the bank, when I don't have to like lean into the tools right away? I can lean into just the core principles of ABM.
We're preaching from the same Bible on this one. I mean, just the simple fundamentals of, where does my audience hang out, and how do I make sure that I am leading with actual value that is personalized, nuanced, and specific to them? And something that I've just been really trying to beat the drum on is, when we talk about personalized, that doesn't mean like, I keep getting emails that are like, we help agency owners in Whitestown, Indiana, just like you. And I'm like, I live in a 4-block city. There's no other agency owners in Whitestown, Indiana, and that's not relevant for me. Like, we're a global scaled remote first agency. It doesn't matter if they're in Whitestown. But hey, it looks like you've scaled significantly, gone from 0 to 15 team members in 18 months. I'm sure you've got some problems on like applicant tracking, which, as a side note,
I certainly did when we were hiring. That's personalized, but it's based on a cohort of signals that you can determine really right. easily. And then figure out the channel mix. It's like agency owners live on LinkedIn all the time. So like,
yeah,
I just don't think people are thinking about it in that way. They think first, what's the easiest channel for me to activate versus where does my audience actually live?
Yes. And they don't, a lot of times we just don't operate with common sense on these things. And we just turn the tools on and just hope for the best. But you have to be tasteful with these tools, right? Like when I worked at Clearbit, one of the things we would recommend to customers, because we had personalization, like where we could do reverse IP lookup and personalize a web page. Well, right away, people would think like, not use common sense and be like, let's personalize based on the person level. And hey, product marketer versus hey, demand gen person. It's like, da, da, da. If that goes wrong, it's going to be very offensive. Why don't you personalize based on, say, industry? So if you know, you'll probably get it right that they work in financial services versus the literal job level that they're in, right? So just try to be sensible about what are some things you can personalize on that you won't get wrong.
I mean, we've all been there because like you see what the tool can do and you're like, this is amazing. So I even did that to a contact level. I was like, hey, first name on HubSpot landing pages at one point. And I realized this is dumb. Like they, if anything, it's like actually overly creepy that they know, like I've got their first name if I get it right.
Right.
So I love the segmentation by vertical or segmentation by problem, typically indicated by growth stage. If you segment right. by those things, it's personalized enough that they understand you get them, but it's not so far that it's okay. I'm afraid they're going to like my house at this point because they know so much about me. So
I like that based on growth stage. That is something that I think we should think about more when we are reaching out to people is just think logically about where they are as a company, but also where they are as an employee in that company. Are they in their first week? Are they a year in?
Yeah. And this one, I don't know why this hadn't occurred to me, but I mean, so for like building an ABM program, I believe pretty firmly it's after you've nailed product market fit and there's going to be a slight dip because you have to shift from going anybody that has a pulse to specific kinds of accounts. Well, if a company's been at the same revenue level for multiple years in a row after a steep growth curve, they probably need an ABM program. So it's like sometimes it's not even growth stage. It's like they're stagnant and like.
Right.
All right. I'm going to go talk to marketing team about that one. Anyway.
No, you actually bring up a good point there. I think this might be adjacent to what you're saying, but back to what we were talking about ICP. In the early days of your startup, you don't even know who to go after. So you are kind of just throwing stuff against the wall, going horizontal, going after all kinds of different job titles and stuff based on your kind of like gut instincts. And it's when you start to mature as a company and see some success with a certain buyer in a certain type of company, then you can build your list more confidently and ABM starts to make more sense to you.
We're just on the same wavelength here because people thought it was odd. So we're about a 2-year-old business. I didn't start running ABM until 6 months ago because I needed 18 months of data to say with absolute confidence, this is our actual best fit customer. And here's who. So if you've been around for 18 months and you've got a certain cohort of customers that have already been with you for 12 months, and they have no signs of churning soon, you're like, God, it's like, that's our best customer. Let's go get more of those. People just thought it was crazy because they're like, why are you not running an ABM program? It's like, I know ABM works, where ABM works. I don't know who we as an ABM agency uniquely can help specific kinds of companies. And it wasn't until we had that data that we could then actually say with confidence, yeah, this is it. So we actually stopped working with companies that are sub 10 million because they don't typically have enough information or data to at least even say clear product market fit. This is going to be exactly who we serve best.
Yeah. And it took you a while to figure that out, right? Before you were doing ABM yourself.
Took 18 months. I don't know. There's something hopefully that people hear in that. It's like, I hire a team of ABM experts and we ourselves didn't feel confident in doing it for ourselves for a year and a half.
Yeah.
After like decades of ABM dedicated experience. So anyway.
Yeah.
I'm curious, as you then think through, we've nailed down channels, we've nailed down audience. How do you actually think about the content mix? Because I'm actually genuinely super curious, given your background. Like I see a lot of companies lean heavy in either like heavy product marketing or like really heavy thought leadership and not the full gamut. It's like, how do you think about the content mix for these different audiences?
Yeah. I was just thinking about this yesterday where I was like, I was thinking about writing some LinkedIn post about what kind of content should it be, top of funnel, mid funnel, late funnel. And I think that's one of the most difficult decisions to make as a company. Like, I don't think I really had it figured out completely at Calendly until about 2 years in. And I consider myself pretty good at knowing what to send people. Like, it took me a while, because what we thought was the case was that, I'll take webinars, for example. We thought that a lot of people would want top of funnel webinars about, like, just general sales principles and recruiting principles. But people started begging us in the comments. And if we weren't monitoring the comments of the webinar, we wouldn't have known this. Can you please self-promote the product more? Like, and that is like a sin in a lot of companies, is like most content. We like, don't talk about your product too much. Our customers were asking. I had no idea, if I wouldn't have read all those comments and requests, that they just really want us to do like tutorials on the product. Whereas I would say, like, at Casemark, I'm starting to think that maybe they want us to talk more about general, like, use of AI, not just our products, but like how lawyers are dealing with AI and what are they adopting, and might be our product, might be somebody else's product, but maybe we need to generally talk about it. That's where my head is going right now, but I won't know until I start to get the feedback when I run these programs from the customers.
I'm curious, do you think that has anything to do with the price point? Because Calendly, as a PLG, people reference it like, we want a Calendly effect with our product. So like, the barrier to enter the tool like Calendly was like next to nothing.
Yeah.
Versus some of the companies that we work with, they're starting at like $200,000 a year. So I'm like, do you think that some of it is price point, or is it market? Like, why do you think at Calendly was tutorials, whereas here it might be more thought leadership on and uses of AI?
That was another thing that we talked about, was it depends on if you're a sale. I think you're getting at this. If you're a sales led company, which generally means the sellers want to sell bigger deal sizes of $100,000, $200,000 a year, right? To even get out of bed, versus PLG, where you're selling usually often have smaller price points for a lot of customers and bigger ones, but like, you can do $1,000 a year for a PLG product oftentimes. So because of that, I think that you have to educate the market on the problem and the space more within sales led. Because the person's like, why should I spend $200,000 on this when it just emails people? It's like, no, it's more than email. It is personalized ABM go-to-market platform, right? And so you have to educate more on the category and the problem, I think, in sales-led. Also, with sales-led, there's more of a barrier to testing the product, right? You have to go through 8 meetings before you ever get to demo in some sales-led companies. Whereas in PLG, your customers can jump in there right away and start using it, so they get the gist of it. And now they want to be more of an advanced user.
We've done like 185 episodes, and we've never actually dug into that. So like, thank you. I think that's actually super helpful for people to understand. The content mix is, I mean, easiest way to think about it, it's just like ease of access to the product. So
yeah,
someone can literally go log in right now, talk about the product more. If they can't, talk about ways of thinking.
Yes.
Probably just an easy rule of thumb.
Super and in helpful. A sales-led company, a lot of times you have customer success is very powerful and is very involved. And they're doing the PLG work, if you will, of onboarding the customer, teaching them about all the features. Like, we're going to certify you on our product, and it's going to be an 8-week, process. And like, by the time you're done, you understand that product. And PLG companies, many PLG companies pride themselves on not just hiring a lot of humans to do things. And so you don't have all these customer success people to teach you about the product. So you have to do marketing work to teach people about the product, to get them to upgrade and to retain and expand and so forth.
This is not what I expected us to talk through, but I actually think this is probably
sorry.
No. Like, I mean this very sincerely. This is super helpful, because I've gotten an odd number of messages from PLG companies that are saying they're using PLG and the offer is like the product itself, and then they do an expansion motion for an ABM program on the back
yes.
end. So this is,
and we can talk about that. And I'd say, like, so we just talked about sales led being its own ABM challenge. Or just content maybe mix challenge of like, is it tofu, bofu, mofu? That's a whole like thing, and it gets debated constantly in PLG companies. I think it gets debated in sales led companies, but oftentimes we all know that like top of funnel stuff really works there a lot of times. What gets even more difficult is when you're a hybrid PLG sales company. So you have customers that are hearing about this product, but they need to hear about it in a very simple kind of almost toy-like way. Right? Because a lot of times they are maybe ICs, individual contributors in a company, not like the VP. And then they sign up and they start using it. And then they have to pay. And that's a certain type of content to get them to pay. And then they start inviting their coworkers and they pay. But then you're like, what does sales get to do? Well, sales oftentimes helps with the expansion motion for a PLG company. And that's its own kind of content. And it's like, well, why should I talk to you, salesperson, instead of just pay with my credit card or maybe just use this product for free? And so that's a whole nother content mix that sales teams and PLG companies have to think about and that ABM has to think about to help them by giving air cover on that sales bolted on motion.
We normally think about ABM and like pipe gen, pipe acceleration and expansion, because that's very sales led in nature. And that's kind of my general perspective is sales should be involved in an ABM program. But it almost feels like, and not almost, it does feel like with PLG and the PLG with a sales led, there's like five stages. That's like still some form of like awareness level content that gets people into the product, product to paid, and then they self pay to a certain point. Mm-hmm. And it self expand, and then it's like sales expansion, and then customer success. Like,
right.
I'm gonna chew on that for a little bit, and actually probably make a new diagram. You gave me homework for the weekend, so thank you.
Yeah, I think you could do a whole thing on just ABM for PLG companies versus sales led. It's very different.
I want to bring you back for a second episode.
Okay,
I'm not kidding. What I want to do is for current programs that you're building, I am curious, like, how do you measure success currently? Because again, some people, you can only get away with target accounts are engaged for probably 2 or 3 months. And then it's like, all right, so what are these people doing?
So Casemark, we're also PLG. When I joined, you can always tell where a company's leaning, even if they are technically self-serve, where you can pay with your credit card, by looking at their homepage. And if the CTA on the, always goes right to someone's CTA and that above the header right there where it says, is it sign up for free? Is it talk to sales or is it both? And when I joined Casemark, it was talk to sales, right? Because we were testing out more of a sales led motion, even though you could buy your credit card. And one of the first things I did was like, let's try to lean into this PLG thing and make the first CTA be sign up for free. Then we can also next to it put talk to sales if you know you have some questions, like give people choice, right? It probably does hurt the conversions a little bit. It's something I have to think about an A/B test, but once they come in, we then think about, all right, how do we nurture them to be able to activate, right, and be able to run a summary of a deposition or something, which is what our platform does. It summarizes with AI legal content. And then how do we get it to spread throughout the law firm? A bunch of people sign up for free and using it. And then how do we come over the top and say like, hey, let's have a formal relationship. One of the things that we do on an ABM front is let's instead of using these ABM tools to get somebody to raise their hand and talk to sales, let's hack it and use it to get people to sign for free and get them to enter the PLG funnel. And so one of the first things me and our GTM engineer Max did was we said, let's use one of these ABM tools to create a list. And it's a hypothesis. We don't know if we're right. Again, it's a target audience right now, let's create some lists and let's create multiple decision makers based on like gut instinct on who these people would be and some conversations we've already had. And let's send emails to them and try to get them to try our product for free. So we just want them to sign up for free and run a summary, which is free, the first one. And let's just get them entering into the funnel, see how well we can do. Versus let's send them a bunch of emails and as salespeople and try to get them to raise their hand to talk to sales. And so the hard work that goes into this is when I'm in a sales-led company, I measure myself on how happy the sales team is and am I giving enough pipeline to them with these emails that I'm doing. And if they're like, this is garbage, these leads you're getting, like, can you please do better targeting? Can you do better content? You're not describing our product right, whatever. In PLG, I'm thinking through, okay, I don't have salespeople that I can just lean on really quickly and ask them how this is going. I have to go wire this up with our product data and our checkout data to see whether the email I sent not only resulted in them visiting the landing page, but they actually signed up for free, which is a different system. And then they upgraded with their credit card, which is a different system. And that amount of work is so much work. There's so much work that has to go into that to prove that your PLG ABM program is performing well versus me just going to talk to sales and being like, how are those leads going that I'm sending you?
Yeah, it's the, I actually did the exercise this week of compiling our revenue with our gross profit, our delivery team's satisfaction with clients to then create a new ICP that was based across every component. I mean, it took me 3 days. We've got 25 clients. So like, it just, when these systems are disconnected, that's what happens typically in early stage organizations. Like the amount of work to actually get a clear view of the customer it's just difficult. But
it really is.
I mean, if you're not doing the work, then you don't actually have the data to then say with confidence, these are our best customers and we should go get more of them. You're just kind of like, I don't know. And the other thing that you just outlined that I really love, and we've seen another client do that, it has a PLG motion, is the like adoption across end users and then going to their boss and saying, hey, by the way, so-and-so are all using this tool, but it's all disconnected and you're not getting actually the efficiency of them all being in the same spot.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting for us to like have a conversation because your team are using it. That has had a pretty solid conversion because it's like, oh shoot. Because every boss wants their teams to be more efficient. So right. When they're already using a free version and you're saying I can pay however many dollars per month to get exponentially greater efficiency, yeah, I'm in for that. That sounds super smart.
That's a classic PLG sales maneuver, is you let the virus spread with the free signups and even the credit card signups. And it's like 8 different credit cards. It's a nightmare for, I'm sure, accounting. And then you come over the top as the salesperson and say, hey, boss, you've got 20 people here using this. Wouldn't you like to just get them all in one organization and one invoice, right? And you can kind of wrap your arms around it. And then what we often call in PLG, the Dropbox method, which they kind of popularized as a sales team there, was you go over top of that, you go to IT and you say, hey, IT, did you know there's a bunch of people using this thing, right? Don't you want to wrap your arms around this more from a security and privacy perspective with single sign-on and skim and so on and so forth?
So making, because typically IT is the blocker, so making it to where IT is now the champion, that's a smart move. I love that.
Yeah.
So I really got two final quick questions, which would just be, I mean, clearly you've built ABM in a couple of different unique sales motions. I'm curious, like, what is something you wish you had done differently when you were getting started?
Going back to what I said earlier is like, just think like an old school marketer from 50 years ago and say like, okay, it's not necessarily first principles thinking, but it's like, all right, what would have I done 50 years ago without all these tools? Well,
yeah.
I would have gone far and wide just to see what stuck. And then I would have done some user interviews and customer interviews and prospect interviews to find out like, why aren't you buying? We thought you would, and get that data. And then I would take it back to leadership and I'd say, hey, I have a hypothesis and I should run an experiment that we should go after, say, you know, digital marketers within consumer companies, and they need to be in consumer packaged goods, and it has to be North America and smaller than 50 employees, whatever. And my hypothesis is that we should run towards them, and let's see if that works first before we scale this and run an experiment, to your point. And then we have the data to prove that we could actually use the ABM tools and go full on. I think what a lot of ABM marketers do, and marketers in general, is they're just like, let's just throw automation and money at this thing. And we're gonna define our ICP based on like a conversation we had with the CEO or some like two salespeople on what they think we should go after.
Yeah. It's we bought the tool and then built the strategy around what the tool could do versus what our customers actually were looking for. And as a result, it didn't deliver nearly as well as we were promised. So yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more of the keep it simple, figure out what worked, how to do more of that. And the other thing that I talk about often is once you do ABM, like in a manual way, it's going to release so many more problems. But like, those are actually specific problems that are solvable versus we need to get more of our best customers. It's like, well, I don't have good tracking at the awareness stage, or we need better data enrichment and signal identification at the MQA stage. Like, those are different problems that are very solvable versus we just got to figure out how to get more of our customers. Like,
yeah,
tough problem versus we need better data enrichment. Great. Like, yeah. I couldn't agree more. Last question is just, what is one thing that you, as you're building out an ABM program, is just like the thing you do every single time that makes sure these programs don't fail?
I would say the number one thing I do is question people's gut instinct on what the ideal customer profile is. And I try to do the hard work of looking at the data and say, I'll give you an example. So worked at this company, Lytics, got acquired by Content Stack. And when I joined, I was noticing we were trying to sell to e-commerce companies, and it made sense on paper. It was like, they have like lots of technologists. We have lots of technologists. They're going to be early adopters. And they were early adopter kick, you know, not early adopters, but early tire kickers. where they would try the product out, but and maybe even buy, but then they would churn and we couldn't figure out why. Well, it just wasn't the right, it wasn't an ICP, it was a target audience. And so what we found was, you know, there was eight of those, but there was two old school trade publication companies that like make, you know, US Banker magazine or what have you. They were using the product and, but we didn't know why. We're like, why is this kind of more old school industry using this really advanced product? And the, and this is something I recommend to everybody to do. We got on the phone and talked to him and asked him, why are you using this product? We're like, oh, well, in our industry, we're not going to use it to personalize our marketing like everybody else does. We use it, and we might do that, but we really need to use it to arm our advertising team who's selling ads. And we want to show them, hey, look how people are using our trade publication. You should spend a lot of money with us, advertiser, to be in here. Like a completely weird edge case we'd never heard of, but we would not have learned that without talking to them. And so I would say that what every ABM marketer needs to do is tap into their inner UX research or their inner product marketer or what have you, and talk to the cohorts of companies that are buying and find out why, because their edge use case will inform your content and it will also inform your product management on what they build.
I really love that. Specifically in this business, I thought we were going to serve one audience and I was ready to go all in. And I got Wise advice that was like, just stay problem specific and just see who like resonates most with the problem. And we have found a lot of success in like the weirdest, nichest SaaS companies because they're vertical specific.
Yeah.
It's like they have a very defined target account list because their total addressable market is super defined. It's like, well, this makes a lot more sense what I was going to do, which is I'm going to work with marketing agencies and be the agency for agencies. And like, it's a terrible idea. And yeah, like, we have no agency clients, which is great. So anyway, this has been super helpful. Jeff, people want to find out more about you. Where would you point them?
Yeah, it's been great, Mason. I would say I would love for people to be my friend on LinkedIn. Just look up Jeff Hardison, Casemark, LinkedIn, and you'll find me. Even talk to me there, ask me questions. Would love to hear from everybody.
I love it. Jeff, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM. We'll see you guys in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter.
Thank you so much for listening to this playbooks episode.
So you have the actionable ABM ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe.
We release.
If you enjoyed this episode, so we'd really appreciate it if you leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.